This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran warning of a possible pullout from the nuclear proliferation treaty or expelling international nuclear inspectors in response to Europe's decision to blacklist IRGC. Islamic countries strongly condemn the burning of Muslim's holy book by Swedish-Danish right-wing extremists in the Swedish capital. And reports of multiple casualties from the U.S. as a result of a shooting in Southern California, which is home to a large number of ethnic Asians. Thanks for joining us. Tehran says all options are on the table against European countries after a resolution by the European Parliament calling for blacklisting of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the EU foreign policy chief has assured him that the resolution was an emotional move and that Europeans are not acting on it. Amir Abdollahian, however, says that they should take the path of logic and correct their stance. He warned that otherwise, Iran will not rule out withdrawal from the non-proliferation treaty or the expulsion of international nuclear inspectors. According to Amir Abdollahian, a Sunday statement by the Iranian lawmakers is also a reciprocal step. In the statement, the MPs warned of a decisive response to the European resolution and retaliatory measures against armed forces of the European countries. Earlier, political analyst Fuad Izadi joined to us with his take on the rising Iranophobia in Europe.
You know, normal people, when they fail at a project or a policy, they generally go back and try to make corrections, learn from the past mistakes, and have an action or a policy that is more reasonable. That's what normal people do. Normal countries do that. And then you have some people occasionally that when they fail, they start swearing, they start chanting, stuff that is not appropriate. And the second category of people are generally, they get upset because of the failure and they start saying nonsense. And it seems Europeans are in the second category, at least the people who voted for this motion. Instead of learning from past mistakes, instead of realizing that they cannot overthrow the Iranian government, they start name-calling, they start engaging in activities that are against international law, and they're going to hurt themselves. You know, they got into a fight with the Russian government, and they are not able to use Russian energy resources. If they want to repeat that with the Iranian government, they will be cut off from Middle Eastern energy resources, and that is not good for people in Europe.
Iran has launched the implementation phase of its first communication satellite constellation project. Iran Space Agency says it is now receiving tender offers for the mission. The head of the agency, Hassan Salariyeh, said the project will be carried out by domestic knowledge-based firms. He added that the project, named after Iran's assassinated Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, will have significant achievements for the country. The satellite constellation is a group of artificial satellites working together as a system. Iran's space program is one of the country's science and technology sectors that have seen major progress in recent years despite U.S. sanctions. Condemnations are pouring in from across the Muslim world following the burning of a copy of the Holy Quran by a right-wing Swedish-Danish politician in Stockholm. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the move is a clear example of spreading hatred and violence against Muslims. Nasser Kanani slammed with Swedish authorities for allowing the desecration of Islam's holy book. He said that such sacrilegious acts cannot be justified under the false pretext of advocating freedom of speech. Turkey also slammed the vile attack on Islam's holy book in the strongest possible terms, saying that a planned visit by the Swedish defense minister to the country has been canceled.
We have been following the process regarding this visit. As you are aware, we observed that there had been no reaction from the Swedish administration regarding those disgusting and mean actions against Turkey and our president. At this point, the visit of Swedish Defense Minister Pål Jonson to Turkey on January 27 has become meaningless and has no importance. That's why we cancelled the visit.
Meanwhile, Pakistan said the provocative Islamophobic act has hurt the feelings of Muslims around the world. Kuwait also dismissed the blasphemous move as a serious provocation, urging the international community to work towards stopping such moves. And Saudi Arabia called for dialogue, tolerance, and coexistence, while rejecting hatred and extremism. The United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Jordan, and Egypt also condemned the move. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation slammed it as a provocative act insulting Islamic values. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas condemned the move as well. The correspondent Roshan Saglam says Turkey has been one of the countries that have categorically condemned the burning of a copy of the Holy Quran by a right-wing Swedish-Danish politician outside of the Turkish embassy in Stockholm.
Turkey considers the act of burning Holy Quran as a vile act, and it says that going on with the demonstration, despite all warnings, was a completely unacceptable. The presidential spokesperson, Ibrahim Kalın, also tweeted about the issue, and he said that this is a hate crime, what happened in front of the Turkish embassy. He also said that despite all warnings, Sweden chose to give or allow this demonstration to happen, and he said this is encouraging hate crime, and this is encouraging Islamophobia. Turkey considers actually allowing this protest to happen, knowing that the Holy Quran will be burned. We know that the protesters, or the main character that initiated this hate crime, had tweeted several times that he is going to go with this act and burn the Holy Quran. So the Swedish government should have been aware that this is going to happen. Nevertheless, they still allowed the protest to take place.
Tens of thousands of Israelis have once again hit the streets to vent their anger at the policies of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right cabinet. Israelis have been protesting against the Netanyahu regime for the third straight week. Protesters are expressing their disapproval of what they call a fascist cabinet and its proposed reforms meant to increase political power. Last week, an estimated 80,000 people descended on Tel Aviv to deplore the cabinet. Netanyahu returned to power as the head of a coalition with extreme right and ultra-Orthodox parties. The cabinet is planning to hand over more powers to lawmakers in appointing judges and overriding the rulings of the regime's apex court. The coalition also intends to intensify the expansionist policy with more settlement units in the occupied West Bank. We asked political commentator Paul Larudi whether there is any difference between the current Israeli cabinet and the previous ones. Here's what he had to say.
What's happening is that the racist and fascist character of Israel is becoming stronger. And this is hardly avoidable, because a priority since the founding of Israel, in fact, when Israel was first in the imagination of Theodor Herzl, it was intended to be a racist Jewish state with the expulsion of the non-Jews from the area. Well, how do you bring about such a state if you don't have a highly racist political agenda, and make it happen with the most extreme elements that will follow you? So this is the logical conclusion. It's going in that direction. The same thing is happening in the Ukraine, with Nazis in the Ukraine being showered with authority by the U.S.
Police in the U.S. state of California responding to a shooting that has claimed 10 lives. Another 10 people have been injured, including at least one who is in critical condition. The shooting took place around the location of a Chinese Lunar New Year celebration in the city of Monterey Park, east of Los Angeles. Police say the suspected gunman has fled the scene and they are still trying to find him. No information about a motive for the attack that is the latest mass shooting in the U.S., which suffers from chronic gun violence. Nearly 650 mass shootings were reported in the country last year. The bloodshed has intensified calls for stricter gun control laws amid resistance by weapons companies and their lobbies. And staying with the U.S., the gloomy economic climate is taking a heavy toll on the media industry, with a series of companies announcing layoffs. Vox Media is the latest outlet to declare such cuts, saying that it will shed 7% of its workforce. That is more than 130 people. The company cited the, quote, challenging economic environment. Employees' union said that it was furious over the announcement. The news follows layoffs at CNN, NBC, MSNBC, BuzzFeed, and other outlets. The Washington Post is also expected to announce a staff reduction soon. Media and technology sectors in the U.S. have been battered in recent months by falling advertising revenues amid fears of an oncoming recession. Over the past few days, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon have announced up to 40,000 job cuts. Well, in the U.S., Joe Biden has now reached 2 years in office, and his approval rating has never been lower. The first part of his term has been defined by constant crises, and many speculate that he will not be able to run for re-election. Robin Mazzari has more from Chicago.
United States President Joe Biden has just reached the halfway mark of his term, and perhaps the best word to sum up the past 2 years is a new phrase, polycrisis, which is defined as the simultaneous creation of several catastrophic events. Most of them started with foreign policy. Biden totally backtracked on his promise to re-enter the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy agreement, and then charged into exacerbating the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Sanctions on Russia have backfired so badly that the average family has lost over a month's salary since Biden took office, or $7,400. Biden came to power with total control of Congress, thanks to big campaign promises of rebuilding after the devastation of the coronavirus lockdowns.
The Build Back Better plan that was supposed to give you all these, you know, workers' rights, it was supposed to, like, you know, put so much money into infrastructure, it was supposed to improve the education system. Barely any part of the Build Back Better plan made it past legislation.
Biden's approval rating is currently the lowest of his presidency at just 40%. The Democrats lost control of the lower House of Representatives in the midterm elections due to widespread disillusionment. The country now faces 2 years of congressional dysfunction, and many wonder if the progressive spirit of 2020 can be recaptured.
Every time Republicans have control, they will use whatever power they can, little or a lot, to get what they want passed. Whenever Democrats are in charge, whatever the Republicans left them, they'll cling on to it no matter how far, you know, right it advanced. And so the strategy here is, it's bipartisan if you look at the big picture. The Republicans move things right, they take away all these social and civil liberties, and the Democrats, when elected, preserve just exactly where they are so that when the Republicans win again, they can move them further right.
Record inflation, another recession, a divided Congress, and no end to forever war. The Biden era can't be defined by just one crisis. A recent poll found that 60% of Democrats don't want Biden to run for re-election in 2024. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Russia's defense ministry says its forces are improving their positions in Ukraine's southern Zaporizhia region. This is the second day in a row that the Russian Defense Ministry says it has taken more advantageous lines and positions after operations in the southern region. Russian forces have reportedly inflicted casualties and destroyed Ukrainian fighting equipment, including two U.S.-made HIMARS rockets. In its daily report, the Ukrainian army said more than 15 settlements were affected by the artillery fire in Zaporizhia, that is one of the four regions Russia annexed after a referendum in September. Some parts, including the main city of Zaporizhia, are not under Russian control. Moscow has vowed to push Ukrainian forces out of those areas also. A ranking Russian security official has warned the West against providing Ukraine with offensive weapons that would threaten Russian territories. Vyacheslav Volodin, member of Russia's National Security Council, has warned that such provisions will lead Moscow to retaliate by using more powerful warfare. The Duma speaker stressed that arguments against using weapons of mass destruction would be untenable by then. The threat follows a recent request of Ukraine from the U.S. to provide it with long-range missiles which can target Russian territories. Russia insists it will not return parts of Ukraine which it has taken control of. Kiev says that restoring Ukraine's territorial integrity is not open for negotiation. The U.S. and NATO allies have pledged billions of dollars in weapons for Ukraine, although they have failed to persuade Germany to lift a veto on providing its Leopard battle tanks. Burkina Faso has called for the immediate withdrawal of French troops from the African country. Burkina Faso's military rulers denounced an accord which allowed the presence of French armed forces since 2018, telling France to leave the country within a month. On Friday, people also thronged the streets of the capital to demand the French ambassador leave the country. Burkina Faso's former colonizer maintains some 400 special forces there under the pretext of protecting civilians from extremist militants. People, however, believe that France has failed to properly tackle armed groups, and its military presence has even deteriorated the security situation in the country. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has sacked the commander of the country's army following riots by supporters of the former President Jair Bolsonaro. The Brazilian defense minister says the dismissal of Julio Cesar da Arruda was due to a, quote, break in the level of confidence. He added that the government needed to address the situation. Arruda took up the post in December, just days before Bolsonaro's term ended. Bolsonaro's supporters ransacked the presidential palace, Supreme Court, and Congress in Brasilia earlier this month. It came days after Lula da Silva was sworn in as president in one of the most divisive presidential elections in Brazil's history. And that is for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume. But parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life. Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design. Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years B.C.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says, "It's strange to meet so many people with the same name." Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces.
The ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, Ya Ilahi wa Sayyidi wa Mawlaya wa Malik Irqi, Ya Man Biyadihi Nasiyati, Ya Ali Man Bidhurri wa Maskanati, Ya Khabir.
Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, my Lord, my Lord, my Lord. As'aluka bihaqqika wa qudsika wa a'zami sifatika wa asma'ik. I ask you by your truth, your holiness, and the greatness of your attributes and names. أن تجعل أوقاتي من الليل والنهار بذكرك معمورة. That you make my times in night and the day inhabited by your remembrance and joined to your service. وبخدمتك موصولة وأعمالي عندك مقبولة. And my acts acceptable to you. حتى تكون أعمالي وأورادي كلها وردا واحدة. So that my acts and my prayers may all be a single litany, and my occupation with your service everlasting. وحالي في خدمتك سرمد. يا سيدي يا من عليه معولي يا من إليه شكوت أحوالي. O he upon whom I depend, O he to whom I complain of my states. So, during the previous episodes, we discussed about some of the conditions of accepted deeds. We said that one of the most important conditions for acceptance of our deeds is sincerity. And the Holy Quran and traditions imply that a deed is accepted provided that its performer has belief in Almighty Allah and does the action actually in accord with the divine rules and for Allah's sake. Now, One of the aspects we must have sincerity in is sincerity in love of Allah. This is what makes our actions, our deeds, for the sake of Allah. And the position of this issue is very high, even higher than sometimes Tawheed al-Hub, because unity in love does not negate any other love apart from the love of Allah. Rather, it makes the love of Allah dominant over other kinds of loves. And subsequently, the love of Allah would be the dominant and reigning love. Because the Holy Quran says, وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَشَدُّ حُبًّا لِلَّهِ. The faithful have a more ardent love for Allah.
And who is aware of my suffering and poverty? Oh, he who knows my destitution and starvation.
Thank you, Allah.
Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So as we said, dear listeners, we have to discuss this sincerity in love of the Almighty Allah as one of the conditions of acceptance of our deeds. وَأَعْمَالِ عِنْدَكَ مَقْبُولَةً, the Kumail supplication says, and my acts acceptable to you. So this is one of the requisites of faith. This is one of the conditions of iman. It is a branch among the branches of Tawheed, this sincerity and love of Allah. In contrast, sincerity and love of Allah negates all kinds of love apart from that of Allah, unless they're an extension to the love of Allah, and they somehow take the form of love for Allah. They take the form of hatred for Allah. However, sincerity and love for Allah is not among the requirements of faith and tawheed, and it has to do with the truthful ones and their spiritual stations, because Allah, the Exalted, enables His friends and His righteous servants to free their hearts from all kinds of love other than that of Him, other than the love of Him. This is what can be implied from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, where he says, the heart, or qalb, is the sanctuary of Allah, haramullah. Thus, do not settle in the sanctuary of Allah someone other than Allah. This is a characteristic peculiar to the heart. The bodily parts move in life in different directions and embark on a variety of affairs which Allah has allowed, which Allah Himself has permitted. But with regard to the heart, it has been considered as the haram of Allah, in which love of other than Allah, attachment to other than Him, ought not to dwell. And this is something specific to qalb. This is why we put emphasis on the importance of qalb, that you must be sincere, and the place that sincerity can dwell is in qalb. We will elaborate on that more in the next episodes. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
In the United States, three Colorado police officers and two paramedics pleaded not guilty on Friday, 20th of January, to homicide charges in the 2019 killing of Elijah McClain, a black man subdued by police, placed in a chokehold and injected with a sedative, though he was neither armed nor suspected of a crime. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of National Public Radio, NPR.org, has covered this story and tells us more. A group of police officers and paramedics pleaded not guilty on Friday, 20th of January, to charges stemming from the role they are accused of playing in the death of a 23-year-old black man who was forcibly restrained and injected with a powerful sedative called ketamine. They were indicted by a state grand jury on manslaughter, criminally negligent homicide, and other charges in 2021. 2 years earlier, Elijah McClain died after being stopped while walking down the street in Denver suburb of Aurora. A 911 caller had reported a man who seemed sketchy. An amended autopsy report released last year concluded that Elijah McClain would have most likely survived but for the administration of a dose of ketamine that was higher than recommended for someone his size. However, the manner of McClain's death was still listed as undetermined and not a homicide. Elijah McClain's death fueled renewed scrutiny about the use of the ketamine and led Colorado's health department to issue a rule limiting when emergency workers can use it. Experts in emergency medicine say prosecutions of paramedics are rare. However, in Illinois, two paramedics who strapped a black man face down on a stretcher after police requested an ambulance last month have been charged with murder. Police officers Randy Rodema, Nathan Woodyard and Jason Rosenblatt and fire department paramedic Jeremy Cooper and Lieutenant Peter Chichuniak all pleaded not guilty during a hearing in the Denver suburb of Brighton. They didn't say anything about the allegations. A judge decided to schedule three separate trials, the first of which is set to begin in July for police officers Rodema and Rosenblatt. Another trial for Cooper and Chichuniak is scheduled for August. Woodyard's trial is set for September. A grand jury indicted them after Democratic Governor Jared Polis ordered Attorney General Phil Weiser to open a criminal investigation into the case. There had been renewed national interest in Elijah McClain's death as protesters rallied over the killing of George Floyd in 2020. In 2021, the city of Aurora agreed to settle a lawsuit brought by McClain's parents for $15 million. Elijah McClain, a massage therapist, was unarmed and had not been accused of committing any crime. According to the indictment, he was walking home from a grocery store in 2019 after buying iced tea wearing a ski mask, months before the pandemic made face coverings common. The encounter quickly escalated, with McClain initially losing consciousness after a chokehold was applied by police officers. McClain, whom relatives say wore the mask because anemia made him cold, complained he couldn't breathe as three police officers held him handcuffed underground and he vomited several times. Democratic Governor Jared Polis ordered the state investigation after a former district attorney said he could not file charges because an autopsy could not determine how Elijah McClain died. His death helped inspire a sweeping police accountability law in Colorado, a ban on chokeholds and restrictions on the use of the sedative ketamine. The amended autopsy report released in September said Elijah McClain died as a result of complications of ketamine administration after being forcibly restrained. In it, Dr. Steven Sina, a pathologist, said he could not rule out that changes in McClain's blood chemistry, like an increase in lactic acid due to his exertion while being restrained by police officers, contributed to his death, but concluded there was no evidence that injuries inflicted by police caused his death. The indictment said Elijah McClain had low oxygen and too much acid in his blood. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. A group of police officers and paramedics are scheduled on Friday, 20th of January, to enter pleas in Colorado court to charges in the death of Elijah McClain, a black man who was put in a chokehold and injected with a powerful sedative 2 years ago in suburban Denver, Colorado. They were indicted by a state grand jury on manslaughter, criminally negligent homicide, and other charges in 2021. The 23-year-old's death in 2019 did not receive much national media attention, but gained more widespread awareness during the massive Black Lives Matter protests in 2020 against racial injustice and police brutality following the murder of George Floyd by a white police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Elijah McClain died after being stopped while walking in the Denver suburb of Aurora because a 911 caller reported a man who seemed sketchy. An amendment autopsy report released last year concluded that he would have most likely survived but for the administration of a large dose of ketamine by first responders seeking to subdue him. The case in court on Friday, 20th of January, involves police officers Randy Redema, Nathan Woodyard and Jason Rosenblatt, and the fire department's Jeremy Cooper and Peter Chichuniak. A grand jury indicted them after Colorado's domestic governor, Jared Polis, ordered the state attorney general, Phil Weiser, to open a criminal investigation into this case. In 2021, Aurora settled a civil rights lawsuit brought by Elijah McClain's parents for $15 million. McClain, a massage therapist, had not been accused of committing any crime and was not carrying any kind of weapon. According to the indictment, he was walking home from a grocery store in 2019 after buying iced tea wearing a ski mask, months before the coronavirus pandemic began and made face coverings common. The encounter quickly escalated, with Elijah McClain initially losing consciousness after a chokehold was applied by police officers. McClain, whom relatives say wore the ski mask because anemia made him cold, complained he couldn't breathe as three police officers held him handcuffed underground and he vomited several times. He sobbed, pleading, "I'm just different, I'm just different, that's all. That's all I was doing. I'm so sorry, I have no gun. I don't do that stuff. I don't do any fighting. Why were you attacking me? I don't do guns. I don't even kill flies. I don't eat meat. I'm a vegetarian." Democratic Governor Jared Polis ordered the state investigation after a former district attorney said he could not file charges because an autopsy could not determine how Elijah McClain died. His death helped prompt a sweeping police accountability law in Colorado, a ban on chokeholds and restrictions on the use of the sedative ketamine. In the summer of 2020, police dressed in riot gear used pepper spray to disperse a large peaceful gathering of thousands at a vigil in Aurora protesting Elijah McClain's death, including local musicians playing violins to honor his love of the instrument, which he played.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.